Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Hello, I'm Gordon Smart. Welcome to the Evening Show podcast. I hope you're in fine form. Producer Vin is here. Hello, Vin.
Hi, man.
Another busy week this week, Vin. We've had loads of guests on, haven't we? Muse. Who else have we had? John Niven. Oh, we talked Radioheads and classic album.
Yeah, we had Twin Atlantic on the phone as well.
Yeah, talking about Transmit Festival. We've been really busy. British Summertime down south, up north, Transmit for the first time. Loads going on.
John Niven was great, wasn't he? It was really fun.
I always feel like I do John Niven a disservice because we always rush through. I'm a huge fan of his. He had seven novels out. My favourite is The Amateur, but No Good Deed. His new book is excellent. And actually, on the Evening Show podcast, we've got an extended version of that interview. So if you listened in during the week, don't worry. There's even more magical John Niven. And bearing in mind, he's one of the darkest men I've ever met. His mum was sitting 3 feet away from me when we did that interview, so it probably had a very different feel to how it normally would. I hope you enjoy.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is the Evening Show here on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart, and I'm absolutely delighted to say that I'm joined by the gorgeous, pouting, fragrant, mini-skirted, leather-clad, LED-sporting superheroes, Matt Bellamy and Dom Howard. How are you doing?
Hey,
thanks for having us.
Doing good, thanks.
Good to see you, boys. Last time you were in the studio, you were on that screen behind you in Miami through the marvels of modern technology.
Look at that. Wow. Yeah. This is lovely.
This is a very fancy studio, isn't it? It does feel like we're in a control station of a spaceship.
I know, all these cameras like hanging around as well. Look, there's a bunch there. Look, three there, two there.
That's the world we live in now. It's amazing how technology is changing the way we all do our jobs, isn't it?
I mean, totally.
You guys last time were in Miami when we were talking, and you did this gig the other night for Facebook as well, I think, where the fans decided the set list.
Yeah, resistance is futile, it appears. I tried to resist social media for a long time. I tried really hard, and then I cracked it. now I'm on Snapchat. Is that the one? Like, that's the one that I can't use that. We tried to use it on tour and stuff, but it's just too complex. To me,
I think
swipes involved to get a weird fox face.
It's good though, because I feel like I can catch up really quickly in what you're all doing. So glass blowing, snowboarding, and dogs seems to cover most of Muse's life in 5 seconds.
We had a lovely glass blowing session down in Devon. House of Marbles, it's called. It's a great place to go and learn about how to blow glass.
It made me feel like a bad father. I was like making paper airplanes with my son, and you're teaching him to make vases. It was National UFO Day yesterday, gentlemen. Did you celebrate that?
Really? I missed it. Damn.
I thought that was something you'd definitely be saying.
If I'd known, I'd have been totally tuned into that. So what does that involve, though? Is that worldwide, or is it a UK thing?
I think it's a worldwide thing.
Yeah.
And I think it means you celebrate in the way you should. You should honour the moments where you've been touched by
extraterrestrials. I did see one. I did see one.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I absolutely
yesterday.
I may have been abducted. I don't know. I'm not sure.
When I was about
17, 16. I don't know if it was a UFO. It might have been just a helicopter or something. But it was at night, and in the middle of a forest, I was driving to my girlfriend's house in the middle of the woods. We come from the Boons, the Boonsville, out in the sticks, and it's this long drive through country roads, through woodland and stuff, and I saw this like flashing light that was in the woodland, and it was really like unusual at that time of night, because it was like 1 a.m. or something. I was just going back after a session, and then I remember just waking up at home, and to this day I don't really quite remember the journey from there home, but I might have been a little bit. I'm driving, so I wasn't. I wasn't. Definitely didn't drink anything. I'm not suggesting that at all. Yeah. But it was definitely a strange flashing light in the woodland.
Don?
I haven't seen a UFO, but I have been dragged out of my bed by goblins. That's true.
It's no way to speak of your road crew, is it?
That is true, though, by the way. It's a known medical condition called sleep paralysis. Yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which is, a lot of people have it. I normally get it
with your condition.
So you get it when you're like really exhausted, like you've done like a long haul flight to Australia or halfway around the world or something, and you're in bed and you feel like you're awake and you can't move. Can't move any limbs, and then all of a sudden there's a kind of strange, threatening, ominous presence in the room. And it can be your...
It sits on your chest.
It's actually...
it's true.
The technical word
is
called an incubus, actually. Right. And it's a little thing that sits on your chest.
Yeah.
And you can wake up and find that sitting on your chest, and it can kind of like affect your breathing. But there's very extreme cases of it where you can actually get... dragged around your bedroom.
Seriously, by an incubus?
By an incubus, yeah. And I have actually been pulled out of my bed by, I think there was probably about three incubi.
I love the plural. And it's a surprisingly common condition, actually.
Yeah. It's very common.
Look it up, yeah, so I can believe it. I thought he was just mental. You know? I looked it up online, and it turns out that there's millions of people that experience the same thing.
Yeah. I think most people that believe they've been abducted by aliens, it's actually that.
That's the real medical reason for it.
Goblins.
Well, I think we should play some news and maybe a bit of Supermassive Black Hole now. It seems like an appropriate song. Right, you're listening to The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. Music's still here, and they're going to stick around a bit longer.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
A bit earlier, I played you the latest single from Muse, Dig Down. Now, the last time I spoke to you, you were about to unveil that song to the world and you described it as a trouser wobbler. Now that it's out in the ether, what's that like to just to see yet another song kind of arrive amongst the fans and be enjoyed? Because you haven't played it live yet, really, have you?
Yeah, no, we have, yeah.
We have in the States, yeah. Because we've just been on tour, like, around the States, doing a few gigs. And, yeah, been playing it first opening set with that, and it's been awesome.
What a way to start a set as well, because it is a real filling loosener of a song. Isn't it that
vibration? Definitely some flapping chinos out there.
In all seriousness, can you notice that when you're playing? Do you see people visibly sort of shake? Because I remember going to see The Prodigy years ago and actually feeling like my heart was about to be removed from my body, and you've done that as well with the old bass.
Yeah.
Can you see it?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. People always seem quite sort of stunned at the beginning of the gig, don't they? And that's, partly the bottom end, I suggest.
Yeah. The magical bottom end. Shall we move on? I tell you what, Matt and Dom are going to stick around. More from them in just a second.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was Royal Blood on Radio X. I'm Gordon Smart with The Evening Show. I've got to ask you, while you're here, gentlemen, what do you make of Royal Blood? Because make a big noise, don't they?
I love them, yeah. Keeping the riff alive, big time. Yeah, there's not many rock bands around anymore, and I'm glad there's someone out there who still is doing something with guitars, Yeah, it's very cool.
Well, a bass.
The bass, I mean.
Which is incredible.
It's a bass guitar, okay?
Yes. Right, so it's a guitar.
Definitely echoes of Muse in the music they're producing, though, do you think?
Yeah, no, we met them a couple of times. They're very nice guys, and they were very polite. I mean, they were very lovely towards us, saying that they actually did like our music growing up and stuff, and so that's cool.
Did you watch them at Glastonbury? Did you see any of it when you were on your travels?
I actually saw them in LA recently at the Viper Room.
Wow.
Just a last month or something like that, so it's like a small gig for them, I guess. Maybe they were like launching their album or something, it's just come out, but yeah, it's excellent, really, really cool. And I saw a bit of them on the old iPlayer at Glastonbury, and I thought it was great.
Does that keep really pushing your innovation as well when you see them doing stuff like that bass guitar, how he splits it into octaves above and below and all of that stuff? Does that keep pushing you forward and think, 20 odd years into our band, we've got to keep making even louder noises?
Keep the riff strong. Yeah. For sure. I mean, it makes me think that, riffs are not going anywhere, do you know what I mean? They're still here, they're here to stay. And Chris's bass has pretty got a lot of effects on it, hasn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, I guess what they've got a great sound, for a two-piece, it's a big sound.
Talking about the riffs, by the way, I'm going to play this for you just a second. If that song, was a human being, it would now be old enough to vote, to have sex, to smoke cigarettes. How does that make you feel when you consider that? I mean, it sounds incredibly fresh to me, but as if it was a human being, it would be... It would be a fully fledged adult now.
Yeah, that is shocking. Yeah, been around the block a few times. So. And we're just putting together this sort of like a vinyl package of the first two albums, and that song is strangely omnipresent across the whole, because the two albums we put together, the reason we did that is because it's going to come with like an autobiography story about how we began, where the music musically, and how we got to that first album, in particular how we got to the second album, because the second album is almost all the sort of vibes and stuff that we left out of the first album. But Plug and Baby was a strangely old song. I mean, it's older than you think. I mean, that it turns out we were listening to demos and there were versions of that song from about two or three years before the first album even came out, and that didn't actually make it till the second album. And I remember it was it sounds made up, but it was written above a sex shop in I was living in this sort of commune type situation, and with a mate of mine, Jake, remember? And do you remember that little room on the side?
Yeah.
It was above, it's still there in Exeter, but we would rehearse above there because there was some space above it that no one was using, and that's where that song actually came to be. It's a Plug-In Baby, you can imagine. Yeah.
There's the inspiration. Finally, no.
That is factual.
So I've gone a bit Benny Hill.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm delighted to say that I was expecting you to look a little bit more weary and battle-worn after the weekend you've had, John. On Friday night, you went to see the Maccabees. John Kennedy's here, I should say.
Hello.
Friday night, you went to Maccabees. Saturday, you're at Community Festival.
Yes, that's right.
Sunday, you recovered and you're here Monday night. Talk me through them in order.
Well, I mean, Friday, I found it really uplifting, even though it was a very sad occasion. I mean, the Maccabees played an absolutely brilliant set. There was so much love in the room, and it's such a big room with a hell of a lot of people in there. And they just played a blinder, and they seemed to be really enjoying themselves as well. And I mean, they got people up at the end, and it was lovely. It was brilliant.
If you can hear some tears in the background, producer Vin still hasn't recovered at all.
Well, Vin went Friday and Saturday, and yeah. I think that if you did two, then that could be a real kind of heartbreaker.
I've got the feeling it might be one of those gigs that I didn't go to that I will regret for the rest of my life. But I've got a family, John, and that's important. And John, on Saturday, a new festival, community festival in Finsbury Park in London.
Yeah,
Saturday.
I mean, I thought it was a brilliant day. It was a great, great bill. It was a really interesting bill in that it seemed to cover a certain kind of music really, really well. So you had Catfish headlining, you had the Wombats playing, you had Nothing But Thieves and Slaves and the Hunter, and then there was another little stage with Clean Cut Kid on there and Antaros, who we've talked about on the show before, and also the band I'm going to recommend to you tonight. And it was really heartwarming to see Catfish, who I've had played at Exposure Live at the Barfly quite a few years ago now, and to see them kind of triumphantly return and play a massive outdoor show in London, I thought it was quite an achievement.
But it's also a reminder of the passage of time and that we're becoming old men, John.
Very old men, judging by the average age of the audience there on Saturday was very young, and that was also heartwarming to think here is the new generation of fans.
Guitar music safe in those hands. Stereo Honey then are the band that you saw down there, and we've had a listen to this already. It's excellent, John. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, I'm a bit in the dark about them. I had them recommended to me by Jack Saunders and a few weeks back now, and I was immediately smitten, got some downloads, played them on the show, and then luckily enough they were on the bill for Saturday at Community, and I was able to go and see them, and I was just really impressed. The singer has such a fantastic voice live, and it was great the way that they kind of drew the crowd in. I mean, there weren't that many people at the start of their set, but by the end they had people dancing and grooving and having a really good time.
Excellent. Well, here it is, Stereo Honey, and the song is called The Heart.
Bless your heart in your soul.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
So every Monday night on The Evening Show, we delve a little bit deeper into an album we love here at Radio X. Now, 16th of June 1997, 20 years ago, OK Computer came out. That's staggering to think about that. It's a long, long time ago. But if you listen to John Kennedy, not long ago, I think it was about 2 weeks ago now, you had Philip Selway, the drummer from Radiohead, on talking about OK Computer, and it was really, really special. If you get a chance to listen to that, it was just before they played Glastonbury, and there's so much detail in there, it's well worth a listen. But we're going to have a little delve ourselves because we love the album too, especially producer Vin. This is a big one for you, isn't it, Vin?
It's one of my favourites, for sure.
Yeah. There are things I didn't know about this, and I don't think you knew either, about the recording. So they were down at St Catherine's in Bath, which is this old stately home. And I always think about Radiohead being holed up in a really dark room full of books. But actually, what was going on was Euro 96 when they were recording this. So they had
it was England-Holland, right?
England-Holland, the victory, the famous victory, as much as it pains me to say it, not long after they'd beaten Scotland as well. Apparently they had this feeling of like they could do anything, they could take over the world. So they're down in Bath and it was really, really hot that summer, if you remember 1996. And I think one of the band, it was his birthday as well. And around that time, they managed to knock out all these brilliant songs, these seminal songs in the Radiohead back catalogue, all based around England's success in a football tournament. I was very un-Radiohead. Anyway, it's the first one that was self-produced with the help from Nigel Godrich, and that's the lineup that served them so well since, as well as Tom York and his solo stuff and side projects that he's worked on. And this is the album where Radiohead, according to producer Vin, went proper Radiohead.
Yeah, this is the one where they get, I think if you're not a fan, you think they get a bit dreary, they get a bit slow, but really it's where they get big, they get anthemic, they start talking about those weird abstract things that they're so sort of well known for, songs about sort of aliens and misanthropy and lots of big and pretentious words, maybe, or very, very intellectual stuff, you know?
Yeah, they're a bright bunch, right? And I think as well that the record label had said, just bring out the Bends 2 and you'll sell 6-7 million copies and you can all go and live in castles.
And they said no.
They said no, which is, you know, it takes a lot of bottle after two albums to have the power to say that about your record label. And luckily for them, the record label supported them on it as much as they could, and it went on to be a massive, massive success. So Ed O'Brien said at the time, everyone said you'll sell 6-7 million if you bring out the Bends Part 2. And we said, we'll kick against against that and do the opposite. And Philip Selway as well, he likes to be called Philip. We should always point that out. He's not Phil Selway. He said there was an awful lot of soul searching on the Benz. To do that again on another album would have been excruciatingly boring. But yeah, if you think about the singles as well, Airbag, Lucky, No Surprises, Karma Police and Paranoid Android. It's amazing that they didn't think there were singles on that when it came out at the time.
It's insane that Paranoid Android was, well, first of all, that it was a single, but also just that it's a song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an epic. It's ridiculous that it even exists. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, they used to play it live because they were opening for Alanis Morissette, weren't they? And it was like 20 minutes long when they were playing it then.
I think that's a trick that Radiohead had have used for years and years. They would always test the music in soundcheck and see how people would react to it. And all of the songs in this album were tested on Alanis Morissette tour. So it could have appeared very, very differently. And I found out as well from listening to the John Kennedy interview with Philip Selway that they spent 2 weeks trying to decide the running order of the album because they were so confused by it. They didn't know which order it would sit in.
Which is fascinating because when 10 years later, when In Rainbows came out, there's a really neat thing where if you play track one from OK Computer, then track one from In Rainbows, you know, track two, then track two, it all fits together. They're all in the same key and all that sort of thing. And you think that, you know, at some level, that would have had to have been planned, right? So maybe, you know, maybe it makes sense though. They're spending 2 weeks agonising over which song to put where,
Yeah, you've definitely spent too long looking at this. But it went to number one in the UK and number 21 in the US, and Radiohead were cemented as an international phenomenon, selling 4.5 million copies of the album. And if you think as well, 1995, Nigel Godrich was just the engineer on the song Lucky, which was written very, very quickly, 5 hours I think it was, for the War Child album Help. And Tom York said that Lucky was the thing that shaped the sound and the mood of OK Computer. So there you go, two songs back to back now from that classic album, OK Computer. This is going to be pretty special. Got Karma Police and No Surprises for you now on Radio X.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week.
X. Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was Radiohead, No Surprises, and before that, Karma Police. I'm doing classic albums on the Evening Show tonight, and it was OK Computer from the 16th of June 1997, which is 20 years ago. No Surprises. Radiohead called it their attempt at Pet Sounds, and if you remember, the video is absolutely incredible. The video consists solely of a single close-up shot of Tom York's head inside a sort of deep-sea diver's helmet, and after the first verse, the helmet just begins to fill with water, and once the bubble completely fills, Tom York is completely motionless for over a minute. It's terrifying. If you've never seen the making of that video, you've got to watch it. It'll just make you short for breath. It's terrifying. Before that, Karma Police. The structure of the song is completely unconventional as well, and it had nothing resembling a typical chorus. For the For a Minute There I Lost Myself outro, York's voice was put through reverse echo, and he called the noise created schizophrenic and thought the song itself had a personality change halfway through. It was very typical of Nigel Godrich as well, who's always trying new stuff to make them sound different. I learned from John Kennedy and Philip Selway just the other day that on electioneering, I think it was, they got Tom York to sing into an acoustic guitar, in the inside of guitar, to get that weird reverb on his voice.
And that's why they've never done it live, have they?
You can't
make it work.
You can't replicate that on stage, which I never knew before. Finn as well, yeah, the title OK Computer, you're telling me it's taken from the 1978 Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio series. And Jack Hargreaves got in touch as well and said Paranoid Android was inspired by Marvin the Robot and Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It was obviously meant a lot to them when they were on the tour bus. Zaphod Beeblebrox, glad I could say that, he had a line that said, OK Computer, I want full manual control now. And that's we were listening to that in the tour bus in 96, and that's where he took Tom York took a note of that phrase, and the album title was born. Clever, wasn't it?
And it all makes sense though, because it's sort of Hitchhiker's Guide is that you could maybe see it as depressing, but it's also quite twee and very British, isn't it? And
very
I guess Radiohead have got that going on, haven't they?
Oh, massively, yeah. Tom York said it refers to embracing the future, it refers to being terrified of the future, of our future, of everyone else's future. It's to do with standing in a room where all these appliances are going off and all these machines and computers and so on. And so, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, it fits,
yeah.
It was really, really bright when you think about it. They're intelligent lads. So, OK Computer on classic albums tonight on Radio X. If you were inspired by that tonight, why not send in another suggestion and we'll do another one next Monday night.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
And I'm very pleased to say that a Scottish gentleman has joined us in the studio today, a man I admire and respect and wish I was in his shoes a lot of the time, because he's one of the best writers Scotland has ever produced, right up there beside Irvine Walsh and Robert Louis Stevenson.
There's a sentence I never thought I would say on the radio. But John Niven, fresh from Glastonbury, he's got a new book out called No Good Deed. I think it's his seventh novel now, and he's still doing it after seven novels. John Niven, it's great to see you, and you've got another belter of a book in your hands.
Thank you, that's very kind, Gordon. Good to be here. As you say, they start to add up, the books.
Ah, it's like that page at the beginning of the book doesn't look so sparse now. There's seven novels on there.
No, it's a reminder that there's not much time left.
It all started off with Kill Your Friends, and now you've got No Good Deed coming out. And some of the reviews for this are already looking brilliant. Dazzlingly nauseating, which I thought was pretty good. Emotionally satisfying, entertaining and dazzlingly written as well, which I thought was a nice wee compliment.
I know, it's always nice to see, but yeah, nauseatingly dazzling or dazzlingly nauseating, it kind of either works, I think.
You did tell a wee porky on social media the other day, you said, sorry for all the promotion here, but my children need wine. You're missing a word. Fortified wine has to go in there. The Buckfast.
You as Scottish, you'd obviously pick up on that, Gordon, but yeah, tonic wine.
So John, tell us a little bit, to start us off, about No Good Deed. It's all about two gentlemen, Craig Carmichael and Alan Granger.
Who are old school friends who don't see each other for an interval of maybe 30 odd years. And then Alan becomes quite successful. He's a food critic and a sort of, if you'd imagine, slightly nicer Giles Corran, maybe, is the sort of way you'd put it. Much as though I love Giles. And they bump into each other, and it turns out that Craig is now a tramp. He's sort of sleeping rough in Leicester Square. And Alan does that thing that a nicer version of you or I might do. He decides to try and help the guy and take him into his house to get him off the streets and try and help him get his life back on track. And Craig proceeds to destroy Alan's life in a completely thankless, deliberately and thanklessly, which is where the No Good Deed comes from in the title. It's an old Chinese proverb that says no good deed goes unpunished. So yeah, that's kind of how it pans out for Craig.
A tale of male envy.
Kinda, yeah.
I've got to ask you, John, there must be, this always comes up every time we talk about your books, there must be characters in your past that you were thinking about when you were writing this. And have they been in touch yet?
Not one specific, but I mean, guy, but when you get older, you find that you're, and I don't know if you found this, as you get into your 40s, the guys you've known all your life, there are strange rivalries and tensions and things. You're the kind of guy you always wondered if you thought he wasn't that mad keen on you at school. Yeah. And even though you're friends, there's always these strange pools and eddies that you don't dip into that thoroughly, you know? Yeah. And it also struck me that when you go to one of these reunion things and you see the guy who was the cock of the walk at school, you know, even if he's now a street sweeper and another guy's become a billionaire, a few drinks and spend some time, the kind of cock of the walk guy quite soon is that guy again. Aye. And you know, the Bill Gates sort of character is again the wee nerd, because a lot of those relationships, your male friends, they get, the dynamics get set in stone when you're quite young, and it takes a lot to shake them. And any kind of school reunion or a golf trip with your pals for school, a few drinks, it kind of all goes the same way quite fast.
And you remind yourself why you probably fell out in the first place or lost touch.
But
it's kind of like meeting an ex-girlfriend, maybe. You know, there's still that romantic idea of the good times, but it doesn't take long to unravel.
Or like somebody described Facebook to me, it's a way for all the folk you hated at school to get in touch with you again.
Was this an enjoyable one to write, John? Compared to others?
I don't know that any of them are enjoyable. They start off enjoyable and then become a grind and then get enjoyable again. And then the process of rewriting, you have to read it five or six times, which is the worst sort of, I hate reading my own first drafts back. That's always really painful. It's like being, I probably can't say what it's like in the family radio show, but yeah, it's not, it's never fun, you know? Yeah. It's like hearing your own voice on a tape recorder. It's probably,
oh, it's horrible.
Now I've got a PG version of that, similarly that I use sometimes. But you have to get through it, you know? But that said, you know, as my mum would say, we're not down the mines.
Right, well, we'll talk about your mum in just a second, because she's very kindly taken a shift on as your carer today. It's coming with you.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The brilliant John Niven is still here, fresh from Glastonbury. It looks like he survived it this time. John, well, I saw a bit of you down at Glastonbury. You were carrying a hip flask given to you by a fan, which is always a slightly dangerous thing, not knowing the provenance of it. Give us your Glastonbury review this year, because I've seen you there so many times, you know it well.
I should point out, the hip flask was given to me by a fan, but the contents were added by my good self. So, yeah, we wouldn't. Here's the liquid acid, John. That could have gone badly wrong. No, I mean, it's my, God, 20 odd time at Glasses, I'm sure yourself, a seasoned campaigner, Gordon. And no, I had a great time. The thing that you, I think, come to realise again as you get older, This is all beginning to sound a bit last the summer wine, isn't it? Is the luxury of it isn't so much the bands or the music or any seeing any one thing. It's getting to spend that amount of time with your friends and just with no responsibilities for 3-4 days, however long you're there for. You know, you get to just blather and talk rubbish. And
we did a lot of that.
We did a lot of that. And wander about, see this band, see that band. And, you know, that's almost incidental to just kind of not from the kids for a few days, you know. I never get that when you see people with, especially with toddlers, you know.
Why?
Pushing buggies through mud and straw with just that look of the damned in their face and that. Can none of you get a sitter organised just for a couple of, you know, I'll do it turns about. I'll go and moan this year, you watch the kids, you go and you're, you know, that's the way I'd do it, you know.
Staff. Did you see Liam Gallagher down? Did you go and see his performance?
I did. We charged through and watched, I think, the first 3 or 4 numbers pretty much. You know, he came on and did Rock and Roll Star and then watched Story, Morning Glory. It was great. And then sadly, as soon as he said the words, here's some new material.
Cheerio.
But you know, there's so many bands you can't do it. You can't watch every set in entirety, you know.
I don't think I've ever felt so white and middle class than the moment I watched Stormzy with John Niven. And you had a Monte Cristo cigar. Shouldn't you admitted
that? I think we also had that going during Jeremy Corbyn's speech. It was a good moment of I love socialism with my 40-year-old malt and massive Cuban cigar. I think everybody should have 40-year-old malt and Cuban cigars. That's the nature of socialism.
What we aspired to growing up at the Magnum Centre in Ayrshire.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was Kasabian. I'm Gordon Smart with the Evening Show on Radio X. I'm still joined by Matt Bellamy and Dom Howard from Muse. Weirdly, I had a mad night out once with Muse and Kasabian on the same evening. It was wild. Matt, you were just telling us about some early Muse that's getting reissued, including the track Plugin Baby.
There's a thing coming out later in the year that should be quite interesting to sort of hardcore fans and, not fans, hardcore fans and people who like collecting vinyl and stuff, because it will be sort of, it will contain lots of old, early demos and, you know, that song in particular, there's sort of really interesting early versions of it before it made it to the second album.
I just had a Radiohead talking about that the other day, and they said that you go back and they had the song I Promise and they thought it was rubbish, and then actually listening back to all those years on, they realised this is really good. I mean, when you dig back through that old stuff, do you find any gems? I think, Dom, you described them as unlistenable demos or something like that rather than new material.
Some of it's absolutely unlistenable. It really is. Because we started going through this kind of, you know, archiving process and really digging around to the very first inceptions of the band and some of the first early songs as well. And yeah, you don't want to listen to that, honestly.
And it's a double vinyl album as well, is it? Just all combined as well.
Yeah, same towards the... the vinyl community.
We're all part of it now.
I might join them actually. I'm thinking of joining in and getting one finally. It's a nice one. Do you do that?
That's all I listen to now.
Really? Is that something that's always been part of your life, or was that something you just got into?
Same thing when you sit with your parents and listen to music, you know. It was all about looking at the album sleeve and the artwork and living it, you know.
It makes you sit down and listen, really enjoy it.
I'm looking forward to that.
I might buy a deck.
There's good money in it for bands as well. Reimagining the economics of music.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is the Evening Show on Radio X with me, Gordon Smart. Muse are still here, and they announced this morning that they're going to be playing a smaller venue, which you won't really be used to these days, I suppose, playing Shepherd's Bush Empire after playing stadiums for the last however many years. Is that something that you look forward to in a different way than playing the big gigs?
Yeah, very excited about that. It's... we've got a lot of sort of requests from the fan base to do a by request show, you know, where we let them sort of go online. Well, I guess the people who buy the tickets will find a way for them to go online and vote for their favourite songs, you know, and we'll just play them basically, you know. So we're hoping or expecting there to be a lot of deep cuts and older material there. Yeah. It'll also be a charity show as well for Passage of Homeless People in London, so it'll be a good sort of fun gig for the fans and something to sort of get us warmed up for Reading as well.
Handing over that set list is quite a brave thing to do though, isn't it? Because do you not have players' favourites, so like back the songs you love to play, and then there are others you don't.
Yeah.
I do not feel a bit odd when they don't vote for a song that you particularly love. I don't know what are the emotions like around that.
I'm intrigued to know what they'll vote for, you know. I'm worried actually, because I might have to learn some weird old stuff that I've totally forgotten, everything, lyrics and all stuff.
We're going to need to rehearse. I can say it, for sure. But it'll be, it's interesting to kind of, you know, attempt to play an old song that you haven't played for years anyway, and then you kind of, you know, you hear it with kind of fresh ears, so to speak, and it feels completely different, and you might end up playing it differently, and so it should be fun, but yeah, we're going to need to
get some tab out, listen some tracks. Yeah, yeah, remember how it all goes. Yeah,
I've seen some incredible music gigs in my life, and Madison Square Gardens was something incredible. Oh, cool. Just after it was after the Boston bombings, actually. So it was a really emotional American gig. He did the old Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. Like, you know, hair stand up, back your neck stuff, and you had all the LEDs in your drum kit. It was an amazing Madison Square Gardens. Amazing anyway.
Yeah. Mm.
Never mind that. What's the worst gig you've ever played? when did you? Can you remember the last absolute shocker?
Well, I mean, all the early days were shocking. You know what I mean, you know, there's some atrocious gigs. You know, playing. I mean, you've heard the playing for one man and a dog before, but we actually literally did that in Camborne in Cornwall. It was a working man's club. We got a gig on Sunday, and it was literally one man and a dog there. Like, it was like that was it. That was pretty bad. First time we built up a fan base in Devon. You know, like a few thousand people, whatever. So we thought we were big down there, you know, and we sort of came to London to like rock it up. We played the Bull and Gate in Kentish Town, and it was empty. Like, literally, I mean, no one. I mean, zero. I'm not exaggerating. It's just our manager was stood out there watching us, and we thought, like, okay, we'll go back to Devon and you know, stick to where we stick to cider. But in terms of like recent times, what stands out? I remember the three. Resistance tour, we had the three towers that were going up and down, and there was one we did in LA that was just, you know, LA was a pressured gig at the time, you know, we sort of, you know, had a lot of family and people there and stuff, and it just everything, it literally everything went wrong, like these three sock things.
We had drapes covered the towers.
Unveil each band member. One came down and landed on my head, and I was trying to sing Uprising, I couldn't shake it off, and when I shook it off, it took off all my guitar rack off the back of the thing, so I realised all my guitars were smashed up for the rest of the show. Chris didn't.
His didn't come down.
He was concealed for the whole thing.
And then we had to bring the lifts down like prematurely so you could get a guitar. Yeah.
But yeah, we've had a few shockers over the years.
Well, hopefully when you're headlining Reading and Leeds next month, it will go incident-free. Another band who will be hoping for the same luck on stage when they play British Summertime on Saturday night are The Killers. Here is the latest single from them. It's called The Man.
Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Boys, every time we talk, there's always technology involved, right? So we did the FaceTime stuff, we talked about all your LED kit and all the rest of it. Recently, a friend of mine got to do this virtual reality thing where he played on stage with the Beatles. So you turn to your left and you get counted in by John Lennon or what. So is that something, do you think, you'll embrace? And if you could, you know, how would you, what would the dream gig be for you if you could join anybody else on stage as part of a VR band?
Oh, I mean, no question. I'd be the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine. I'll just take Tom Morello's job. Just to see those mosh pits and the wildness, the craziness. See Zach up there. That would be amazing. Yeah, you mean virtual reality or just in general? Yeah,
just generally. Yeah, either.
Yeah, I probably would bodge up all the guitar parts and it wouldn't sound as good. But I'd love to be up there and play with them. We opened up for them in the Coliseum in LA a while ago, and it was just the crowd was just awesome. Yeah.
Mm. What were you, Dom? If you could stick behind it,
probably like
box some fans with anyone.
Like the Band of Gypsies, Jimi Hendrix Band of Gypsies, that incarnation that he had there of that album and that period, because it was almost like, you know, like early Rage Against the Machine, you know. It's when he had like Buddy Miles on the drums, and it kind of it changed the feel of it from Mitch Mitchell before. It was more jazzy, and Buddy Miles was like way more kind of soul. And that period, so that'd be pretty awesome.
I noticed as well the GoPro was unleashed the other night. I don't know where it was attached. Did you ever, like, is it on your head? I saw a video of you walking into the crowd and you...
Oh, that's the Snapchat glasses.
It was like a pair of glasses that had like a little camera built in. And you just like, you just touch a button and it records like 20 seconds or something, or 10 seconds.
Is there going to be a bit more of that then?
I think so. It's a fun thing to do, you know, because people can get to see the perspective. I do it when I'm walking out into the crowd, because then you can actually hear like all the sort of song and everything coming through the PA system. If I do it on stage, all you hear is this cymbals, basically, which is Dom's like, can't hear anything else. So
that's all I hear when I'm performing on stage. Just white noise.
Yeah, we're trying to find a way to get the sound in there, you know, like the actual sound mix in the glasses, and that'd be really cool. Yeah.
The danger is you leave them on, though, isn't it? You'd be hearing a lot more, or worse, you know, if you kept them on. Gentlemen, all the best for the Shepherd's Book Empire gig, Reading and Leeds as well. It's going to be an exciting time the next few months. And a new album to come around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy days. Thanks very much, boys. Muse, appreciate it. Thanks for coming in. I'll see you soon.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Radio.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
He's one of the most famous musicians from the most iconic bands in history, but Sir Paul McCartney is not beyond the carriages of late-night trains. Good old Macca was snapped on his own, taking the train from King's Cross to Hastings, and he was chatting to fans on the journey as well. I think he lives down in Peasmarsh in Sussex, I think it is, and that must be his regular commuter train. And tell you what, given that he's a vegetarian, it's all the more impressive because of that unmistakable late-night stench of Burger Kings and Cornish pasties and commuter trains. And I love the detail in all the news stories about Macca using an old school Nokia phone to keep in touch, telling folk he was on his way back home. I can just imagine him passing the time with a little bit of snake. He's a great bloke, Macca, really down to earth chap given his fame. A couple of friends of mine were at a party last year, and there's a bloke there in a fancy dress outfit. He was dressed as a dog, having the time of his life all night, dancing away, getting stuck in on the dance floor, really enjoying himself. And at the end of the night, the mask came off, and lo and behold, it was Sir Paul McCartney. Imagine that. Your attitude would change very slightly to the way you were behaving, I'm sure. Right, this is The Beatles now on Radio X. What a song this is. Tomorrow Never Knows.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm going to let some light in on the magic. I've just been doing an interview in the break with Twin Atlantic, which was about to play to you. Unfortunately, the marvels of modern technology have let us down, and something didn't quite go to plan. Allow me to start this interview, as it was meant to happen, with Sam McTrusty from Twin Atlantic. Now, if you visit any city in the world, regardless of how big it is, how small it is, you're always guaranteed to find a Scotsman somewhere. Today, we have managed to find Sam McTrusty from Twin Atlantic, and he is in Moscow, I believe. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you going?
Can you paint the picture for us right now, Sam? Where are you? Just tell us exactly where and what does it look like?
I'm in a dressing room right now. We just played our first ever show in Russia. It's in a football stadium, so it's not my normal type of gig, you know what I mean? We don't play in a stadium every day, so a bit of a special day.
How did the gig go?
Technically, a bit of a nightmare. We arrived at the airport last night around like 9 or something like that, and then our gear didn't arrive. No. It was supposed to be on the same...
The number is not available at the moment.
So there you go, that's what happened. I'm afraid Vladimir Putin does not want Sam McTrusty from the wonderful Twin Atlantic to explain what he's up to in Moscow. Lord knows what those Scottish boys did at the CSKA Stadium last night that made it unfair or not right to be broadcast on Radio X tonight, but ah well. I'm going to play you some Twin Atlantic now, though. This is Whispers on Radio X.
All I hear are whispers.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
John Niven is here, the author of Kill Your Friends and the brilliant new book, No Good Deed. Now, if we just delve back, John, into a bit of Kill Your Friends time, you've still got amazing stories. Even now, after all these years, you can still come up one I haven't heard. And when we were at Glastonbury, I think I'd just seen a video of Goldie getting into some kind of stramash with a security guard, and it sparked a little memory of yours of a time a meeting didn't go very well when you worked with him.
Probably a couple. I should say that, you know, I've seen Golden now and again recently, and I think he's very much a changed man from what he was like back, as we all are back in those days. But yeah, there was, when we were doing the record, the Timeless, the album, Alan Parks, who was creative director, I can't remember who the designer was, but they'd done a really great cover that was like a piece of sheet metal with Metalheads, his label name, stamped in metal. And it was very, as I looked that up, what Massive Attack and things, it was very DIY and rough edge, that was sort of deliberate. And Goldie, shall we say, had very different ideas for the cover, which the sort of computer graphic teardrop thing that is the cover. Yeah. I think a friend of his had sort of worked on, and we were kind of, shall we say, discussing the respective merits of these approaches in the
telling
meeting.
Him it was rubbish.
Well, I was kind of making, as you know, I'm a fairly forthright person, I was making the case myself for the other artwork, and Goldie said, "That looks homemade," and I went, "Well, that's the point. It's kind of it's postmodern." But so it looked at me like I was crazy. And when, as I said, I pushed it a bit further, and he eventually sort of leaned forward and put his hand in my knee and went, "You're getting a bit personal, mate." And I thought it was that sort of mafia moment, we're about to take you outside with the dogs and the baseball bats. And I kind of, well, you know what? It's your cover, mate. You should really have what you want in that at the end of the day. I mean,
it's normally the moment where a man from Ayrshire sticks the fish supper in his face.
There you go. Fortunately, no fried goods were to hand, Gordon.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Mr. Niven,
There's quite a lot I'd like to talk to you about, but one story I'd love you to tell me is about Slash Gordon. I'm writing a book, and it's based on the most famous people I've bumped into at the urinals over the time of my career, right? So Sean Connery was mine, and I'd like to carry it on as a chain. So I wonder who the most famous person Sean Connery found himself at the urinal beside. We had Dave Grohl the other day. Who else did we have? We've had all sorts of brilliant names. Larry David, Dennis Rodman, beside Spud from Trainspotting, and the book goes on. Who's the most famous person in your career that you've bumped into when you've been visiting the box?
I'd have to say Sylvester Stallone.
Oh.
Who, this was at Coco in Camden in the early 90s in the VIP bit of some party. And he was, as you know, absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a tall man. Yeah. He came up to my shoulder. And I, as you can imagine, also it being the early 90s, I was fairly refreshed. So I think about halfway through, I finally thought, I'm going to talk to Sylvester Stallone. And I went to, sort of leaned over to begin, which, as we know, is a bit of a no-no in that situation anyway. So, but I was going to say whatever to him. And before I could even get the sentence started, a hand sort of fell on my shoulder, and I turned around, it was his bouncer,
yeah,
who was obviously lurking like 4 feet away. Yeah, yeah. You know, we were both staring at the wall.
Yeah.
And the bouncer, he didn't even say anything. He just sort of looked at me and sort of did, shook his head, waved his finger. And
he knew what was coming.
It was like, as if to say, nobody talks to Sly while this is going on.
That's just fantastic.
I went, okay.
Well, so we had Liam Frey from Cortina's the other day, and his was Sly Stallone as well. So
really?
We can carry the chain on perfectly.
Oh, no, Sly Stone's a common one.
No, it's a good one. It's a really good one. John, I feel double guilty for asking you that question because your mum's here. Mrs. Niven is here, and we were just having a chuckle earlier on because we had Virginia Grolin recently. She'd written a book called From Cradle to Stage about rock stars and their parents and what their parents made of their children's fame. So I'd love to know, Mrs. Niven, how you feel about your son's chosen career and how he's getting on.
Very proud of him.
Yes.
There we go. A strong endorsement from mum.
I should
point out to the list, I don't have my mum routinely with me during press trips, but she's down today. We're in London going for dinner, and I said, I've got to go and do this interview for mum. So
it's when you came with your mum today, I was going to have to take all the stuff out about the tsunami of feces. And all the filth that's in the book. But
as you can imagine, from somebody who's read all my books, God, my mum's pretty strong stomached.
Broad-minded Ayrshire lady. John, back to the book, No Good Deed. Now, I love the characters you've created, right? Stell Fox, Kennedy Marr. God, there's some Ranta Campbell, who makes a bit of an appearance in this. And I love it when books, Irvine Welsh has done it beautifully, where you refer back to other characters from books and it creates this sort of community of people. And you refer a bit to the amateurs in this and some of the people that existed. Was that something that you set out to do right at the beginning, or did it just seem to fall and click into place like that?
I kind of wanted to do it because, as you say, I'm a big fan of that thing in writers. When you love a writer and you read all their work and it cross-references other books, and they create this little universe that you come to know. And it's something that only, I mean, with the amateurs, the book you mentioned, it's whenever you meet a real fan who's read everything, it's usually their favourite book, and it kind of is mine. So I thought it's a nice wee nod for the real fans who'll get it. Some it should be enough that if you don't know it, it doesn't affect your enjoyment of the book, but if you do get it, it enriches it a wee bit. And I'm also hoping down the line to write a sequel to the amateur, or prequel rather, to the amateurs. So it's just a nice wee way of, you know, and Stephen Stelfox from Kill Your Friends appeared in the second coming just a wee cameo. It's just a nice, I like that intertextuality between books, you know.
And now Kill Your Friends has been made into a movie with Nicholas Holt, and actually, as you mentioned, Johnny Vaughan played a little part in that as well, our fellow Radio X star.
He certainly did.
He played a part.
Involved an option in the novel for the screen very early on.
Yeah,
he was a big early supporter.
So when you sit down to do these books, there's one part that you think, how will this play out if it became a film? Because you know, I've read, I'm into it now, and I can already see how this would pan out into a big film.
Yeah, part of you always, I think, because I work as, you know, as a screenwriter as well. Yeah. So part of you always sort of wonders that. The only novel of mine, I think, that was originally a screenplay was Sunshine Cruise Company. Yeah. Actually was, and then we then became a novel. But Nick, your party's always wondering a wee bit what that might look like.
Aye, and that leads on to the next question about casting. As a final question, maybe we've got a little exclusive here, that Martin Compston, who's been on this show many a time, might be involved in something very exciting that's John Niven related. Can we dangle a carrot?
I'm sure you know Martin better than I am. I'm sure if he's happy to talk about it. Yeah, he's... I'd say Martin's a big fan of the novel, and we've exchanged some emails about the possibility of working together on a TV adaptation. So it's Selwyn Days, but I'm a huge fan of Martin's, and it'd be brilliant if that happened. But
fingers crossed, and I'd love to see that after party as well, if ever it happened. Compton and Niven together.
And Irvine.
Oh, God. You know, and Irvine Welsh added into in Irvine. John, listen, all the best and no good deed. The book's out now.
It's right out this week.
Yeah, out this week. And I tell you what, looking in the back, the reviews are great. Catelyn Moran, not just because she's friend, your best friend, is saying amazing things about it. The Sunday Times, the Times, everyone's saying it's superb. And Danny Wallace, who was once of this parish.
Indeed.
Also loving the books. So, John, I'm so proud of you. Your books are excellent.
Thank you, Gordon.
And it's always lovely to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
No Good Deed out now. That's John Niven. If you want to listen to that again, you can hear the podcast on Friday night.
And thanks for the whiskey.
Danny Bother.
Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was the Evening Show podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Gordon Smart with producer Vin. If you enjoyed that, please do leave a review and tell all your friends to get on board with the Evening Show podcast. I'll be back with another edition next week.
Radio X.